Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
The stupid. That is 45% of the undecideds, John. They are the swingest of the swing voters. And they, as they always do, will decide this election.
And it's a fascinating thing. Now, how do you break down the stupids?
Well, ironically, it's a rather complex demographic. You've got your paste eaters, your numbskulls, your nitwits, your f-tards. People whose head gets stuck in jars when they eat pickles. That's a surprisingly large component. People who lose arguments to babies. Douche nozzles, tiger petters.
Now, I don't mean to interrupt. I'm not familiar with all the lingo. Tiger petters.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's people who go into zoos and they pet tigers. Let's push on. People who jump up and down on frozen lakes to check if the ice is strong enough to hold them. Shaved gorillas who've somehow acquired driver's licenses. The voluntarily lobotomized. And finally, Cubs fans.
Cubs fans. Now, they're... Cubs fans are considered a subset of the stupid.
Oh, absolutely, John. I mean, they've had 100 years to figure out that what they want will never happen, yet they still yearn for it.
And that is stupid.
Yes, it's very
because,
stupid.
Because the Cubs will never win.
No, that's right, John. The Chicago Cubs will never, ever win the World Series.
No, they won't.
They won't do it.
They've made God angry.
That's right. That's what I'm saying.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Our business is people and their love for trees. And by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. If Mother Earth and Father Time had a baby, never mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
All right, all you douche nozzles, Cubs fans. I want all the Cubs fans right now to get down and do push-ups and do one for every year since the Cubs won the World Series.
Yep, you'd be nice and fit.
So that's about 102 or 3 mm-hmm. right now. I think we're going on 103. And that's our honorary. We have to play that every time we have an election in town. That is the audio bit from The Daily Show, of course, with Jon Stewart that we trot out because it's our favorite.
It's our favorite. Yeah, I love that one. Yeah, that just makes me smile.
Being a White Sox fan, of course.
Yeah, it helps too.
Mark Munger, pull that microphone over to you. We have a new team on the team member on the Mike Novak Show, at least for now, until he runs screaming from the room. And that's Mark Munger. How you doing, Mark?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me here.
He's piloting the ship today.
Yes, he is. I feel naked. I'm not in my spot, you know?
Watch
I don't
it.
Have a computer.
Watch
well,
it.
Oh, I don't mean it like that.
Watch it.
Like,
but the scary thing is me turning a microphone over to Heather.
You gave it to
me
anyway.
And not distracting her with a computer and answering phones and things like that. Mm-hmm. This is just...
I can be good.
Well, part of the reason I'm doing it too is because we got a call pouring in there. Mark, that's your job, buddy. You got to answer that. She'll help him with that. Part of the reason I did that is because we have an anniversary we're celebrating.
We do.
I can't believe it.
I know.
2 years ago today, you walked into this room.
Yep.
And I never got my show back. I haven't had it back
I'm
since.
I'm not trying to take it. I'm trying to help make it better. I don't know. I win, sometimes I lose.
Uh-huh. And sometimes I win, and sometimes I lose. Was that anything important, Mark? Anything we should know about?
It was a big thank you from Santa the bus driver for the last segment that was on.
Really?
Oh, he's a Sox fan, I believe.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
He liked that.
Oh, he liked that. Okay, good. But Heather's been with the program 2 years now, and we're going to shoot for three, huh?
I know. I've gone from zero houseplants to about seven.
She's learning stuff.
I'm learning stuff.
How about that?
And I want to, yeah, and my brother-in-law and I want to start composting this spring. He bought the wood and everything. He wants to build his own composter. Mm-hmm. I said, well, this is the show to listen to.
Well, today, this morning, and I'm going to get to that in a second, too, because I got an email from a friend of mine who kind of misheard something I said on the show last week, and I want to clarify it in case there are other folks out there who also misheard. And that happens a lot in radio. I have to admit, I've been doing this now for 13 years, over 13 years. And I can't tell you, I suspect that nobody hears anything right on the radio when you say things. They catch half of it because they're distracted. They're busy running into the car in front of them and.
Well, gosh, I hope not.
or they're
running errands and they're going in and out and the kids start screaming and yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. And so you catch part of it. Or some people on a Sunday morning are still lying in bed, half asleep. And so when I did overnight radio, it was the worst because I know people, they would have the radio on and they would drift in and out of sleep. And so they'd hear parts of one conversation and it would meld into part of another conversation. And I got the weirdest emails about, did I hear you say?
Yes, 20 minutes apart,
yeah.
But yes. I said that and then I said this 20 minutes later.
But here, people can do the same thing. You know, they're sort of drifting in and out, trying to get out of bed on a Sunday morning, and then they hear me say something.
There's nothing like good talk radio with a hot cup of coffee on a Sunday
morning.
And
speaking of hot topics and talk radio, mm-hmm. Hot talk. I melded those two together.
See, you're a segue master. You've been born to do this for the last 13
seriously,
years.
Seriously, because in the first half hour, we're doing a little of this and a little of that. I'm kind of, and since we are Chicago's Progressive Talk, and I don't usually do this, I don't usually just delve into politics that aren't specifically related to the environment and green living. But I'll tell you something, with what's going on in Wisconsin right now, that is going to be really, I mean, you want to tie those together, all you got to do is look at the bill that got passed by the House of Representatives early Saturday morning that guts the EPA mm-hmm. and takes away its powers to do so much, takes away the money so that you can't enforce it. And that's how what's going on in Madison and Milwaukee and the state of Wisconsin relates to that. This is the first step. I mean, if you watch Rachel Maddow the other day, she kind of outlined, she says, you've got the corporations and they put most of their money towards Republicans. Who's putting their money towards the Democrats? Well, it's the unions. I love the fact that people say, oh, those unions are so powerful. They control everything. Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah. No, folks, that's not true. And the idea that the governor in one fell swoop is just going to take away collective bargaining, which is, you know, a 50-year-old tradition or longer up in Wisconsin, is amazing. But, you know, I will say one thing. For all those folks who last November wanted some kind of change, and I'm thinking a number of union people voted these people in. It's not like Scott Walker didn't have this reputation already. The people in the state of Wisconsin knew who this guy was, and they elected him anyway. And now it was close, 52 to 48%. Still, somebody voted for him. And elections have consequences, as they say.
Yeah. I'm sure they weren't seeing this one, though.
Well, this was not on his radar. Yeah. This is not. He didn't say, I'm going to come into power and I'm going to get rid of collective bargaining. Mm-hmm. If he had said that on the run-up to the election, I think it would have been a lot different.
Oh,
so
yeah.
The question I'm – so what I'm going to do – and I know we have a lot of people listening in Wisconsin – to Chicago's Progressive Talk. And if you want to call in, 773-838-9278, I've got some time. I'd love to hear a report if you've been out in the streets, out in the state capitol.
It's all the statewide employees, right? The nurses, the teachers, the firemen, the police officers, the bus drivers, everybody.
Yep. You know, and those people, and Mike Sanders was talking about it a little bit on Our Town this morning, too, and, you know, people who might want to take away their collective bargaining because they're jealous. I'm not talking the legislature. I'm talking the other people who would say, hey, well, how come I don't have pension? You know, I would say, why don't you join a union? This is why we have unions. This is why we have an 8-hour workday.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you enjoy your weekend? You can thank a union for that.
Yeah, did you enjoy having a weekend so you could get out and protest?
Exactly. Or get out at all. Go run your errands. Spend time with your children, you know? And, I mean, people forget that that wasn't just always there. We had to fight for that a long time ago, and now suddenly...
Well, the one thing we are is myopic as a country. We have no sense of history. And I, frankly, just don't get it when folks think that the corporation is going to protect you more than a union does. That's nutty. That's crazy talk.
Well, Tom Hartman, another one of our weekday hosts, was saying that he feels that this whole, you know, conservative push, making all these changes, taking all these rights away, you know, corporations being considered people in the Supreme Court, is just like a push to, like, basically repeal Teddy Roosevelt's New Deal. FDR's got my Roosevelt cross. But, all those, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's kind of obvious.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something the Republicans have wanted to do for 30 years.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And have been steadily chipping away at it for 30 years.
And succeeding. That's what scares me the most.
Well, all right. Maybe it is time to fight back. Anyway, if you were up there, if you have been to the Capitol, if you want to talk about the climate up there, I don't know if it's snowing up in Wisconsin right now either. We'll find out from Rick DeMaio at 8:30. Give us a call, 773-838-9278. In the second hour of the show, we're going to be talking about the WPPC Natural Landscaping Seminar. Now, of course, I want to make sure I get it right. The Wildflower Preservation and Propagation Committee, which... longest name ever for a conservation group.
That sounds lovely.
Or the WPPC, which sounds like a New Deal program. They're having their natural landscaping seminar next Saturday out in McHenry. And Carol Brown, who has a website called Ecosystem Gardening, is going to talk to us about what she considers ecosystem gardening. In the Good Growing segment, Irv Cernauskas, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right, he's with a company called Irv and Shelley's Fresh Picks, which is a local and organic food delivery service, kind of like a CSA, but a little bit different. And he is also on the Illinois Local Food Farms and Jobs Council, and he will talk to us. He'll give us two reports, one about his own business, Irv and Shelley's Fresh Picks, but also tell us what's going on lately in the Illinois Local Foods, Farms and Jobs Council. So we will talk to them, all in the second hour. And, as we get rolling here, I got an email from our buddy Tom Shepard, who has been keeping us apprised of the, fight to keep the coal gasification plant out of the southeast side of Chicago. And you can still write to the governor about that, and the information is up on my website, mikenowak.net, MIKENOWAK.net. And there's on the home page, you'll see some info on there, and you can click and send a message to the governor and ask him to please go back to his environmental roots, please go back to his Citizen Utility Board roots, because that's, you know, that's how Pat Quinn got his start. And I hope he does that and realizes that we don't need more expensive gas, natural gas, and we don't need it made synthetically. And we certainly don't need the pollution that comes from a coal gasification plant on the southeast side of Chicago.
No, there's plenty there already.
Yeah, we got
there's
Fisk
plenty.
And Crawford. So you can do that. So anyway... it's not the same thing, but it is. Tom Shepard sent me this note, and it says, "Hi, Mike. Thanks for getting me in trouble with my morning walking partner, who is a master gardener and officer of the historic Pullman Garden Club. I told her that you were suggesting early planting on last Sunday's show, and she insisted that it was much too early to plant and that the ground in Chicago is not ready yet. There was still a lot of the snow on the ground at the time, and we had not reached the balmy temperatures that we've seen the past couple of days. She checked your website to see what you might have suggested, but I don't think I was hearing things that weren't said on your show last week. Could you repeat which vegetables you said could be put in the ground already? All right, Tom, listen closely.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be drifting off here on me, okay? I did not say you could put anything in the ground. No, N-O. She's right. It's way too early.
Right.
See?
We said that. We said it's going to get warm. Don't get duped into planting your tomatoes just because you want to get out in the garden.
Well, it wasn't even tomatoes. What he got confused about was when I told folks to go to the Liberty Gardens site. It's libertygardens.com, and my friend Vicky Nowicki puts it together. And if you look at her entry for Wednesday, February 9th, She has a list of vegetables that you can start indoors right now for planting outdoors when the weather is ripe for that. So the point, her point was that you can start some plants from seed indoors. I'm going to just keep doing this right now, like arugula, broccoli, cabbage, lettuce, kale, kohlrabi. You start them from seed now so that it around the beginning of April, you can put them in the ground and you will have starter plants that can get rolling. Now, you can also self-seed at that time, direct seed, but you don't want to do it now. No, you're not going to do that now. So that's the point I was making. And if you go to Vicky's website, again, it's libertygardens.com, and look at the she's got a bunch of entries about planting cool season vegetables. And Wednesday, February 9th is the one that I'm referencing. And you can go look at the various vegetables she's got there and when you want to get those going. And those are cool season vegetables. And, for instance, you can direct seed things like peas, radish, spinach, turnips, and lettuce. But not now. When it comes time, which is around the beginning of April in Chicago, for those cool season vegetables. So this is why you have to pay attention, Tom. So I hope you're not in trouble with your friend anymore, and I hope I'm not in trouble with your friend. A couple of other things. I note that I got an email that Martha Boyd from Angelic Organics passed along to me that she received from Wes King, who's with the Illinois Stewardship Alliance. And there are a couple of bills that have been introduced in the Illinois General Assembly, and one of them, since we were talking about this the other week, is about the labeling of genetically modified foods sold in Illinois, and the other is about a bill that bans the use of trans fats in food served in public school cafeterias. Now, the bills are... Let me start with the trans fat. Representative Ford has introduced this and requires the State Board of Education to adopt rules for elimination of vegetable oils containing trans fats in food served in public school cafeterias beginning on July 1st, 2016. Well, let's not rush into anything. and for the elimination of all foods containing trans fats from public schools beginning on July 1st, 2017. And that is House Bill 137. Then House Bill 1249 is the Gen Engineered Food Label Act. Representative Mel, it creates the Genetically Engineered Food Right to Know Act. provides that all foods containing genetically engineered material or produced with genetically engineered material must be clearly marked with a label placed in a conspicuous place that indicates that the food contains genetically engineered material or was produced with a genetically engineered material. And that is, again, HB1249, if you want to find more information of it. Now, what happens next, of course, is all the money from biotech comes out, and that, you know, we'll see what happens with that. But it is interesting because it takes us to the story we were talking about a couple of weeks ago about the genetically engineered alfalfa. You should know we're about to have genetically engineered salmon as well. Were you aware of this, Heather?
No.
Yeah, in the last...
they have to clone the salmon, or what, are they just going to make them bigger and fatter? Is that the idea?
They're going to make them they're super fast-growing salmon. Yeah. And what's interesting,
they need a way to catch an Asian carp and make them somehow super fast growing less. Can they work that in another way?
Well, it's by a company called Aqua Bounty Technologies, and they have Aqua Advantage trademark fish.
Oh.
Aqua Bounty is developing advanced hybrid salmon, trout, and tilapia designed to grow faster than traditional fish. Aqua Advantage salmon reach market size twice as fast as traditional salmon. This advancement provides a compelling economic benefit. This is off their web, the Aqua Advantage website, by the way. It's an advantage. It's a benefit to farmers because there's a reduced growing cycle as well as enhancing the economic viability of inland operations, thereby diminishing the need for ocean pens. AAS are reproductively sterile, which eliminates the threat of interbreeding amongst themselves or with native populations, a major recent concern in dealing with fish escaping from salmon farms. Hey, and you know, that never blows up in our face.
No, never. We never have a problem with that.
Oh, no. Nothing ever escapes. Oops, super weeds. Yeah. Well, other than that, we have some of those because of all the Roundup Ready products we have floating around in our fields. So I'm looking at a piece that Mark Bittman wrote in the New York Times about it, and it goes back to the bill that is being introduced in the General Assembly in Illinois, and that's about whether you can label these, whether this will happen. And he brings up some really interesting points about labeling. Let me get down to that point because it's an interesting article, and I don't think I posted it on the website. I'm going to have to post it up there. As he writes it, it's the unwillingness to label these products as such, GMOs. Even the GE salmon will be sold without distinction. That is demeaning and undemocratic, and the real reason is clear. Producers and producer-friendly agencies correctly suspect that consumers will steer clear of GE products if they can identify them, which may make them unprofitable. And as he writes, where is the free market when we need it?
Duh. I don't mind buying farm-raised fish as long as they're all natural. I kind of like the idea of them being bred for consumption. And
well, farm-raised fish have problems. There are problems.
Such as?
With the way they tend to, and I'm getting this off the top of my head because I don't have the information in front of me, but they tend to have disease problems because of confinement and the use of also antibiotics and that sort of thing. That's why.
Because I hate the idea of, the waterways are in such trouble as is, and the animals
are still thriving there.
Oh,
that's
God,
for sure.
Yes. Yeah. So I like the idea of not pilfering our natural resources.
Well, but there's a thing
further
called aquaponics, too, where you can raise that kind of fish indoors in tanks, and it's being done by places like Growing Power and others, and that may be the future of that kind of thing. So it's an interesting story about whether GMOs will be labeled. And my figure, I figure it's not going to happen. Won't happen in Illinois. Certainly not going to happen nationally. I just don't see it happening because of what Mark Bittman says here, that if you label these things, people won't buy them. Rightly so, because most people want to have the GMOs labeled. I believe it's like 87% of the American people have said we need to have GMOs labeled. Well, of course, because the American people want that, it will not happen. This is, you can almost guarantee that that is the case. Because why be, geez, we shouldn't be bothered with all those labels. That's government interference, don't you know? I don't know. So that also was going on. I was wondering if there was one, oh yeah, one more thing. And we mentioned at the top of the show that we are, we got elections coming up in Chicago. And one thing I did put online, if you go to MikeNovak.net and this week's show, there's a link to an article in the Reader that was written by Carrie Leiterson about which candidate will be the greenest candidate, because that's kind of what I focused on in my show. And she looks at the issue, and you know, the Green Growth Platform, and you can link to that on my website and see what candidates said. And some, most of the candidates have answered. Carol Moseley Braun is, other than saying yes to most of the questions, really has had no positions on them. What's interesting about the Reader article is that the Reader invited the candidates to come in to discuss positions with them. And as Carrie writes here, spokespersons for Emanuel and Chico said their candidates weren't available, but Del Valle found time to discuss his positions with the Reader, and Braun's office didn't respond to requests. And as for Watkins and Doc Wallace, apparently they didn't respond either. But that article is linked to mine. Oh, okay, hold on. Let's get a correction. Thank you. I always like being corrected. Kathleen on line one, hello.
Hi. I just wanted to say that, as I understand it, the major problem with farm-raised fish is when they require more protein than they produce. So that farm-raised salmon, for example, they have to feed them more fish. Little fish than they produce in terms of protein. Mm-hmm. This is not true of tilapia, which is one of the reasons that you tilapia is a good one to buy. And this is also the reason that you have to get those, one of those little cards from the Shedd Aquarium that tells you which fish are sustainable, because it's not a blanket issue of wild versus farm-raised.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the Shedd Aquarium has a little thing you can carry in your pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are great.
Yeah. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay. I know there are other things, and I, when I get a chance here, I'm going to take a quick look at the issue. And I don't think it's just the protein issue.
Oh, I'm sure it's not, but that's a big one, which mm-hmm. is why some farm-raised fish are on that list, sustainable list, that is handed up by the Shedd and a number of other places.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Kathleen. I appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We will be getting to Rick DeMaio weather in just a second. First of all, though, let me tell you that it's still a little early, and I mentioned this just a second ago. It's a little early to get planting outside, but there are ways to start playing in the dirt. In fact, there's no time like the present to pick out your flower and vegetable seeds and start them indoors. That's what you want to do. Why start from seed? Well, you know the reasons for that. You save money, you have fun, you can, kids love it in particular, and you can grow exactly the varieties you like. Starting plants now from seed gives you a head start in the spring, even with the cool season vegetables. You get them going now and then plant them when it's warm enough outside around the beginning of April in Chicago, traditionally. So you want to go to SID's Greenhouses and Garden Center because they're ready to help. Their shipment of flower and vegetable seed packets is in. So shelve those seed catalogs. Run over to SID's. They have what you need. You know the popular varieties go fast, so visit SID's early for the best selection. Looking for other ways to get your green fixed? Then plan to attend SID's 22nd Annual Garden Expo coming up on March 4th and 5th in Palos Hills. You'll be able to meet the reps, attend seminars, and see the newest products and programs for spring. Best of all, admission and parking are free. SID, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
What are you doing next year? I don't mean in general. I mean from February 25th to March 3rd. I'll tell you what I'll be doing. I'll be on the Norwegian Cruise Line's Norwegian Sun to visit the Caribbean destinations of Nassau, St. Thomas, San Juan, Great Stirrup Cay, and more. And I want you to come with me. We'll be exploring spectacular Zone 11 gardens on some of the most iconic tropical islands on the Northern Hemisphere. You know, if you listen to Chicago's Progressive Talk, you always hear where they're taking folks on a cruise and they talk politics with some of the liberal talkers. Well, this we're talking plants, and we're going to visit spectacular gardens where orchids, bromeliads, and coconut palms are as common as dandelions are in the Midwest. And you're going to see those plants, not the dandelions, but the other plants, up close and personal. I'm the genial host, and I'll share my insights about Midwest gardening along the way. And believe me, we're going to have a great time, and I hope you'll be on board. Now, there's a couple of ways you can get more information. You can call CruiseWorks at 800-876-6664. 800-876-6664. Or you can log on at cruise-works.com, or just write to me, mike@mikenovak.net, and I'll send you all the information you need. I'm planning on getting a tan next February, and I think you need to get one too. And those, as I said, the dates, it's February 25th to March 3rd of 2012 is when we're going to be doing this. Let's go to line two before we get to Rick DeMille. Hey, Dan, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hi, Mike. I just wanted to call people's attention to the fact that there's also consumer-driven ways that non-GMO foods are purchased. The lead guy in this is, you're probably familiar with him, Jeff Smith. And if not, he wrote the book Seeds of Deception.
Uh-huh.
And he has kits. And people are using them all over the country, in Canada. I've known him. He's an amazing guy. And if you Google that, you'll find the ways to apply pressure, the questions to ask, the lists of things that are GMO, that are non-GMO. And we've had a lot of success in using his kits. So, I mean, we don't have to rely on waiting for the government and the captive agencies to make the changes. People can do that directly. And then the second thing, just if I can say one, do you have time for one quick
other
comment?
Yeah, go ahead.
When we were talking to the lady from Organic Valley, which is a wonderful company, I respect it, but
yep.
I brought up the point that we do have the capacity to provide food that's organic now. I mean, it's not in effect, but we have the full capacity. And the reason for that, the basic principle is that if you're using organic with permaculture, which means using the natural landscape of the terrain, it uses 100% of the sun's energy.
Mm-hmm.
And the monocrops today that are grown, they spread them out in a field, and it's one crop, and it can only use 30% of the sun's energy. The plants just cannot take more of it. And so like a Mexican farmer who would grow beans, squash, and corn, that's 100% of the sun's energy, and that's just three levels. It's the root crop, it's the vines going up the corn, and that uses 100%. And permaculture farming now has like 7%, you know, 7 or 8 levels. So we can do it.
Well, I know we can. As a matter of fact, you know, when I referenced the LibertyGardens.com site with Vicki Nowicki, who puts that together, she and her husband, Ron, have been permaculture people for 30 years. They've been doing this for 30 years.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is nothing It's not new. In fact, it's kind of going back to an earlier way of dealing with things. And as you say, using the sun's energy, which is limitless.
Yeah.
Then why not do that?
Exactly.
You know, getting really quickly back to the GMO thing you brought up first.
Yeah.
You said there were great tips. Give me one of them or two of them that you employed as a strategy.
They list the kinds of oil. Well, in terms of contacting the food companies, we simply write to. We find out who the product manager, we find out who the sales manager is, and we say, we always start with, we love this particular product, but we don't know if it's GMO or not, and can you assure us that it is? But he has many tips because he has little cards you can carry with you of what's GMO and what's not, and you can just say you will purchase the ones that are. And when even 5%, he's found, of customers go in and do that, it has an impact on what they buy, because that can swing the overall sales in one direction or another. And Jeff Smith goes into this, you know, from A to Z. He's been working on these kits for years, and they're really kind of perfected because it has the information to go in so that you know which products tend to be GMO, non-GMO, and in every category. And then he has all the different types of questions to ask and ways of approaching it in the stores.
Well, my feeling is that if we can put the nutritional content on food and label it and tell us, so you know how much sodium is in there and how many calories you're going to consume, I don't know why we couldn't put the GMO content as well, or at least the fact that it might have been that. But you know, it's becoming ubiquitous, unfortunately, in the country. So much of the food we grow now is GMO that at some point it's going to be a lost battle. I don't know whether that battle can even be won anymore.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. We simply, in with the state of the government and who's capturing the agencies. There's no reason to just fight a one-front war and wait for that labeling to happen via government. It has to happen via the knowledge of people and actually what's in the stores. And this is a way to go at it directly.
Well, listen, Dan, thank you so much for the comment. I appreciate it very much, and I'm glad you were listening.
My pleasure.
Thanks. Have a good Sunday.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Heather, this is for you. Oh, that's not the one. No, wait a second. No. It says... No, it says number 10, but number 10. This is a disc you put together, so...
Oh, really?
Yep. Number 10 is not the one I thought. I was gonna... Let's just... All right, a little Russian roulette here. No, that's not it. Oh, what a shame. I was gonna play Little Red Riding Hood.
Oh.
Oh, wait, I don't even have your mic on there. Try this one.
That's a wrong CD, I think.
I think it's the wrong CD.
Because my playlists are never labeled incorrectly. It just must be in the wrong sleeve.
Oh, I'm sure.
They're never labeled incorrectly.
Never labeled incorrectly.
But if they're put into the wrong sleeve, what are you going to do?
Tuned it to the station for music.
It's all music.
The Enya, the real sleepy stuff there.
It's all music all the time, Mikey. Okay, well then let's just...
Well, I remember when I first talked to you on the phone 2 years ago and I came and started the night before, I was so nervous and excited that I stayed up making what I thought would be good, you know, bump music for your show. And the first song that leapt to my mind was Garden Party by Rick Nelson.
Uh-huh. But I could find that.
Yep. That was my first song.
Well, let's just play one because to get into Rick DeMaio weather that has nothing to do with you, has nothing to do with anything.
I wanted to have everything to do with Rick. He's the best meteorologist in Chicago.
Okay. Oh, wait. I wish it would help if I pushed the right button, wouldn't it? Oh,
my
man.
Pappy said, son, you're going to drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod liquor. Have you heard the story of the hot rod race with the Fords and Lincolns was setting the pace? That story is true. I'm here to say I was
Rick
driving
was
that
driving
Model
that
A.
Model A. All right. Let's bring in Rick DeMaio. I have no idea what it has to do with you, Rick.
I don't know. Do I have a hot rod someplace?
I don't know. Do you even own a car?
Well, you totally missed out on that. You could have really taken it and pushed it many, many miles in the junk department, right?
Yeah, I suppose I could have. But good morning. Where's the big storm that?
No. First, let's start out the right way. How come you're not doing a show live from the steps of the Madison, Wisconsin State Capitol?
Because Ed Schultz is there, and
And we don't have a portable engineer anymore.
Yeah.
You ever have one?
No, we didn't really.
Well, sparsely,
kind of
sparsely.
Yeah.
But what amazing going ons up there, huh? Isn't that great?
It's very interesting, and this is people power.
This is people power down to the grassroots, and I think it's pretty amazing how this could really set the tone for many, many, many other different forms of protesting across the United States. And I really think that they got a little bit of a kick of inspiration for what happened, you know, going on in Cairo just a couple of weeks ago. I really believe that.
Oh, for sure.
I do think it's related on a certain level.
Yeah, it's a bit infectious, but the, you know, the more important thing, and I had a conversation with one of my friends from colleges in Boston. We still talk all the time. He's very Republican, very conservative, and all we kept talking about was how it's time for these employees to start thinking that they have to put in a little bit more of their own to make the whole system work. And I kept saying, I go, but you're missing the point. The point is the fact that the governor is trying to take away the bedrock of what makes a union a union, and that's the ability to collectively bargain what you believe you have coming to you or what you should be having in the context of your union contract with the station that employs you. And that's it. That's the bottom line. And I keep thinking, and I have a real fear, a kind of an inside feel that the longer this goes on, I think that message, message maybe come muted somewhat. Do you believe a little bit of that?
So you think that the longer it goes on, the spinmeisters get their way, and then
absolutely,
suddenly we don't realize that it is about collective bargaining and rights that were fought for decades.
And I think the reason why is because I still think we underestimate the power of right wing conservative radio and right wing conservative television. I was actually watching Fox News. I know, it was horrible that my remote actually...
I just
channel.
Grimaced when you said that.
No, I know. No, it was like, that should have been like a hot button on my remote that doesn't exist. But and then they had four people on the panel, and they all agreed with one another that what the people were doing was wrong and reprehensible, and they should stop and go back. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, this isn't even like balanced. It was just bizarre listening to them. And it was very sad as well, thinking that there were so many of the people across the United States on their couches listening to them going, yeah, I agree with you, you know, and it was very sad. And that's why I think one more day the Democratic senators have got to get back to Madison. They've really got to show that they're lawmakers and not hiding it, because I think the jig is up on that. They really got to get back to her and get this ball rolling.
Yeah, you're probably right. I have to admit, I don't think that running away from the problem is going to solve it. You're going to have to confront it head on, and they're going to lose. And so what happens if Wisconsin suddenly rolls back collective bargaining for its public unions?
I don't think that's going to happen. I think they didn't really run. I think they saw this as an opportunity to have to allow these people to have a platform to protest and to let the governor and the state and the rest of the country, you know what was going on. But at the same time, I think they also realized that in the end they may shoot themselves in the foot, and that's always the chance you take when you become a leader as a politician. And not someone who just sits back and goes along, you know, the merry way of everybody else. I mean, I still go back to what happened in the early 80s when Ronald Reagan fired all the air traffic controllers. I remember, because I was in high school, a senior, I was thinking about this. I'm like, there's no way he's going to do it. He can't do it. These are air traffic controllers, and it's a union. But he did it. He busted them. And you know what? It didn't have any effect on it. But that was much different, because these were these were...
It had a long-range effect, Rick. Mm-hmm. It set the tone for the last 30 years in terms of unions in this country.
Well, it did, and I agree with you on that. I don't mean to cover it up, but the fact of the matter is it didn't have an effect on his ability to become elected, is what I meant to say.
Mm. No.
He was elected by a landslide in 1984, but it'll be interesting to see what happens with this whole thing. I know it has nothing to do with the weather, but oddly enough, the weather played a huge role in allowing that protest to swell to, 8,000 and 16,000 and 20 and 30 because the weather was so good there this past week, and now they're getting sleet and freezing rain and snow. So this may be because it's a Sunday, and obviously tomorrow is President's Day, so obviously the schools aren't in session anyway. Mm-hmm. This may be the next to the last day of the protest up there. I really think so for a bunch of, all those reasons combined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought about that, actually, while I was looking at the video of the folks out there and how warm it was and how it was an opportunity in the middle of February, especially in Wisconsin.
Right, right. I don't know what's going to happen to the people in a rotunda because I remember I was there in 84 when the U.S. invaded Grenada, and for some reason we decided as derelict college students to walk up State Street and park ourselves in the rotunda there for about 24 hours and say, what do you want? We don't want them in, however those kind of chants go. But that was, I think, the first time that anybody ever took up space in the rotunda since the Vietnam War, which was obviously in the early 70s. But this is, I think, one of the biggest rallies in Madison since the Vietnam War. And the thing about it is, very few of them are the college students from the UW. These are mom and pops and people just basically from, like you said earlier, just grassroots efforts and it kind of came out of nowhere, and I think that's the beauty of it.
They got sucker punched and they responded to it.
Right, but it wasn't with a left hook. It was like slowly coming back to or slowly coming to the place where obviously the sucker punch was thrown, and they just quietly said, this is not going to happen, this is not going to happen. And then obviously with the weather being so nice, they were able to push the protest outside. And like I said, not to continue to go on this political vein, but I always think that things happen for a reason, and when you get all these things happening at once, and I hate to bring this up also, but there was a full moon on Thursday.
Well, okay.
If there's ever a way I can continue to spin the atmosphere into politics, I'll try to do it.
Speaking of which, we tried to put a moon app on my homepage. We had it up yesterday. I found this, and it gives you it sits there on the homepage, and it tells you, because I think the moon is cool, and knowing phases of the moon are cool,
right.
So it gives you the phase and where, how much of it it's waxing or waning, and
right, or illuminating.
And remember,
like that,
a couple of weeks ago, we had trouble with the blue screen. Same thing happened. We put this app up there, and the Explorer, Microsoft Explorer, the older versions, wouldn't read the page.
Mm-mm.
It's like, that makes me crazy because I want my moon app
on
there.
I knew it was a full moon for one reason. All the crazy people were calling the radio station. Like the ones that think the John Birch Society is going to come and get them through the radio, like the crazy conspiracy theorists. Folks, and I had a just rush of them in a 48-hour period, and I'm like, what's going on? And then I'm like, it's a full moon,
duh. We also have a lot of electromagnetic energy due to a couple of solar flares as well. I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but the CMEs, the coronal mass ejections of the last week, produced some incredible northern lights and some slight problems with with transmissions across the world. But other than that, I don't think it had anything to do with your phone call.
Okay, so what have we got coming up this week?
Well, first off, we got this storm moving through, and it never was supposed to be a big storm, but it was one of these things where we were going to be on basically the southern edge of this massive amount of snow that's falling from the Dakotas all the way through Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, and on eastward then into the upper sections of the Northeast. For us, though, it appeared late yesterday afternoon we were going to get into maybe a quick shot of snow, sleet, freezing rain, and then all rain. But due to the fact that the snow arrived here about 4 or 5 hours later than what most people were expecting and what most numerical models were showing, the atmosphere has warmed up. So we basically missed out on the snow, so forget about that. We had a little bit of sleet and freezing rain move across the northern suburbs this morning, but by and large, this is basically a non-event now, Mike, and we're pretty much getting some, I think, well-needed rain to wash away all the salt and the muck that has been collecting on our streets and sidewalks and our shoes and our apartments and floors of our homes as well over the last couple of weeks. It's amazing how quickly we melted 20 inches of snow, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness. It's practically gone, and Heather gives it a big thumbs up here.
Well, I parked by the curb. It was awesome.
Yes.
It was funny because there were a number of streets in Chicago where, you know, ever since they put in the planters, you don't have as much room, you know, for your traffic lanes anymore. And every once in a while, you're driving, you see, I see four or five cars sticking out about 6 inches. Then all of a sudden, you're looking in your left-hand mirror there, if you're in the right lane, wondering if someone is going to actually be nice enough and let you slide by. And I counted at least four or five cars the other day where people did not have left, driver's side mirrors, most likely because they had knocked off because they were parked too close to the road, or someone actually came by too close and hit them. But, once that snow is gone, we're really able to, you know, now warm things up if we get some sunshine. But unfortunately, Mike, the pattern is beginning to shift. So we got this big storm basically moving north of us today. So rain temperatures low to mid 40s south, probably mid to upper 30s north. The frontal boundary that came through early this morning is going to shift back through now as a cold front. That will come through probably after midnight, but it's going to come through very, very slowly. So we're not going to see anything in the way of a dramatic cool-off. In fact, if it drops back into the low 30s tonight and probably stays in the upper 20s and near 30 tomorrow, that's about it. But I think there's enough backside energy where we'll probably freeze whatever's on the ground. It's not going to be a flash freeze, but we may get maybe a half-inch to about an inch of wet snow during the day tomorrow, particularly late in the afternoon. It clears out nicely, though, for Tuesday, and whatever's on the ground will probably just evaporate or melt at that point. Tuesday afternoon high temperature probably up to about 30, and you kind of notice this time of the year, and I've always mentioned, once you get past the 15th of February, that February sun angle is getting pretty high in the skies. You can warm up your car. You can melt that snow fairly easily. So I think Tuesday looks like a pretty good day. Wednesday, even better sunshine, probably temperatures mid-30s. Then the pattern gets kind of muddy by the time we get to the end of the week, but it does look like we get back into a cold and snowy pattern, believe it or not, beginning next weekend. So Friday, Saturday, maybe a little bit of snow around here. And then it appears that the first 2 weeks of March, I think we're looking at least two significant storms coming through here with probably better than 6 inches of snow. We're not done with winter anytime soon. I still think the first half of the month of March could be very, very active. But at least this next one that's moving through is going to be well to the north of us.
You know, it's going to drive people crazy because we're beginning in March is when you start having flower shows and that sort of thing, and people think that we're done. Let's
in this city.
No, mm-hmm. No.
And that's you're not those, safe till April.
April, end of May.
Indoors, right? Yeah, really.
what was that, Rick?
I said that's why those flower shows are indoors, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right.
The one coming up at Navy Pier, you probably mentioned this earlier, but this is just for me.
It's coming up on Navy Pier, opens the 5th of March.
Okay.
Yeah, and I will be speaking later that week, on the following Wednesday, whatever date that is. But
you have it written down.
In the middle of the week, I'll be speaking at the Chicago Flower and Garden Show. Actually, I'm speaking in Niles, Michigan at of course, now I get caught and I'm going to blank on it. I'll talk about that because on the 5th, I'm actually going to be Niles, Buchanan, Michigan, Fernwood, Botanical Gardens I'm going to be speaking there. So get that on. In fact, we'll talk about that in the next coming weeks. Rick DeMaio Weather, you can go to DeMaioWeather.com or link out from my homepage. Always a pleasure talking to you, Rick, and we'll do it again next week.
Okay, hopefully you won't see pictures of me on the front cover of the Wisconsin Capitol Ties, right?
Whatever you need to do, pal. do it for the unions.
That's right. All right. Talk to you next week.
You bet. Bye-bye. These days, more and more businesses are going green, and that's good news. But the growing popularity of green service providers also points to the value of those who have led the way. WRD Environmental is one of them. Since they were formed in 1997, WRD's mission has been to create sustainable landscapes. They have always used locally grown native plants when possible in their design and build projects. They use recycled energy efficient supplies and sought nature's balance. Simply put, being green is part of their DNA. Even their location speaks to their commitment. The Chicago Center for Green Technology is one of the nation's greenest buildings. Their civic contributions towards sustainability run deep. Staff members are on the boards of a variety of green organizations. They help support MELA, the Midwest Ecological Landscaping Association, which just had its conference last Thursday at the Morton Arboretum. Of course, that's the organization I founded, and I'm so grateful to WRD to be on board with MELA. For experienced sustainable landscape development, you should trust the professionals at WRD Environmental. On the web at WRDEnvironmental.com.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
Ooh, and here's a tip from the Care of Trees. If you've been a faithful steward of the earth, you might also get paid for it. According to realtors, trees can account for as much as 10% of a property's value. So take care of them and consider having a certified arborist evaluate the trees before you sell your home or before you buy one. A good inspection involves assessing the trees from top to bottom, analyzing everything that could affect their health, and determining whether they pose a threat to property and safety. An arborist from the Care of Trees can do this for you. They'll do it all right. And if you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Stick around for the next hour. We're talking about a great conference coming up and some natural landscaping.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Should we just play
I'd
this
song?
I'd
love to. God, that's a good song.
It is.
You cannot not feel good when you hear that song. It's like,
Webmaster extraordinaire Kathleen sent me a notice that she's put information up on the website about the farm-raised fish. There's a link on the homepage, MikeNovak.net, and she got an article from Monterey Bay Aquarium and their Seafood Watch, and they talk about the farm raise and what the problems are, and the different things that, you know, and among them, pollution and disease when fish are farmed in open net pens. Byproducts are released directly into the environment, includes fish waste, uneaten food, disease, parasites, pesticides, and antibiotics that can be harmful to the environment. Escapes. Each year, millions of fish escape from aquaculture operations, and their impacts aren't known. I saw a quote, and it's in one of the articles about the what some people call the Frankenfish, which is the genetically engineered one that they're. And by the way, what you should know about that is it's not even the USDA that is, or the EPA that is going to approve them. You know what? It's the FDA. Now, you tell me, when it's the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration.
That's the other Roosevelt. That is the
agency that's approving the genetically modified fish. Why is that the case? Is this a drug? Well, it's food, kind of, but it's odd, you know.
That's when you get I get really nervous when the EPA and FDA lines blur. It's like, oh boy.
The other thing on this website that Kathleen posted, and you can link to it at mikenovak.net. Habitat damage, farm location is important. Rich coastal waters have been polluted by open net pen farms, and hundreds of thousands of acres of coastal mangrove forests have been lost by conversion to shrimp ponds. So, and on and on and on. I mean, this is a huge issue. All of these are huge issues. And maybe, you know, that's that one of these days we'll have to have somebody on the show to talk about that as well. This is the Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk. AM and F. Oh, you know what? You have a you. I didn't put her name. We need to get one more person on the line there, Mark, because we're in. And let me get you a phone number here. Don't mind me, folks. I'm going into my cell phone.
Because these are the people from the WPPC, the Natural Landscaping
right.
Seminar,
and
which will be Saturday, February 26th, from 8 to 3:45 at McHenry County College Conference Center.
Mm-hmm.
8900 U.S. Route 14 out in Crystal Lake.
If you can read this, Mark, give Nancy a call, too. I forgot.
And what does WPPC stand for again? I'm computerless. I feel strange.
Oh, that's true. You don't.
I know. I can't check anything. I can't. I don't know what to do with myself.
Just talk. The wildflower.
Did you just say that?
No, that was just. Don't forget, I also have control of your microphone. The Wildflower Preservation and Propagation Committee. Let's go to line one and bring in Carol Brown. Hi, Carol. How are you?
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And Carol is going to be one of the people speaking next week over at the WPPC conference called Tending the Earth. Her talk is Ecosystem Gardening. Native plants are essential. Carol's a conservation biologist, a naturalist, a photographer, author, and educator. And you got a book coming out, right?
I do. Ecosystem Gardening should be out in April.
Which is also the name of your website. So we'll give that a plug as much as we can. See, but you're supposed to have it with you when you go to the conference. That's how it works. You know, you drag a few copies. You don't have advanced copies, do you?
No, sometimes life interferes.
I know. It gets in the way. Let's go to line two as well and bring in my friend Nancy Gonciorek, who is with the WPPC. Nancy, I got to ask you, how did you guys come up with that name? It's unwieldy.
Oh, Mike, that could start many wars. We've had this name. We have had this name for over 35 years. Our organization has been serving McHenry County. And from time to time, people think we should have a more user-friendly name, but this goes back to the founding members of our group who are environmental pioneers in McHenry County, like Bill Howenstein, Margaret, and I should say Bill and Alice Howenstein, Margaret and Lou Markey, and the great Bill Wingate.
Mm-hmm.
And they started this organization many, many years ago to help people to plant natives in their own backyard. And to help to expand our natural heritage. And so it's kind of a sacred cow, even though it's really hard to roll off the tongue.
I know. I always have to have my cheat sheet with me because I can never remember. I know it's WPPC, and I go, wait, does propagation or preservation come first? I can't ever remember which it is, but it's a...
Yeah. And people call it, the Propagators Wildflower Group, or, you know, that's why we kind of use the WPPC on our logo so that it makes it a little easier.
And Nancy's with the WPPC, and like I said in the first hour, it kind of sounds like a Depression era work group.
My husband says it sounds like a radio station.
WPPC.
Maybe
hey,
we
could
give you a job, Mike.
I'll come out and broadcast for WPPC. In addition, we'll get to Carol in just a second, but in addition, you've got, as always, a good lineup of people. I tried to get Steve Apfelbaum. He's with... apply to ecological services, and he's in New Mexico in the wild someplace or something today. I don't know exactly where he is.
Yeah, that's I spoke with Lynetta's secretary, and he apparently is off the grid.
Wouldn't
so
that be nice?
So he was unable to join us today.
Wait, go back to that, Mark. I hadn't seen this before. It says, when was this? Re-elect Nancy Gonciorek on Tuesday, April 5th.
Oh, are you looking at my website, nancygonciorek.com?
Yeah.
I am. I also serve. I'm a good public servant. I also serve on our local school board, and so I'm up for re-election this year. But that's not what we're here to talk about today.
Okay. Well, he was doing some searching around, and it popped up. I thought, okay, let's.
Well, thanks for that, Mike.
Okay. The plug: vote for Nancy Gonciorek Tuesday, April 5th for the school board of McHenry County or what district?
It's Crystal Lake. It's
Crystal
our K-8 school district in Crystal Lake.
And when you run for senator, let me know, okay?
Oh. Yes, I'll say wildflowers in every backyard, right?
Hey, there you go. Woo-hoo! There's a platform.
Carol Brown loves that. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Nancy. I do love that. That would be an excellent platform to run on.
In addition to Carol and Steve next week, you also are going to be talking about providing habitat for native bees.
Yes, I'm very excited about that because apparently there are a lot of myths about our native bee population, and we will have Rebecca Tonietto from the study that's going on at the Chicago Botanic Garden.
Okay, give me one of those myths.
Well, I guess you're all going to have to come to the seminar if you want to find out all the information. But
you got to tease. You got to tease it a little bit.
Yes, I will. Rebecca told me that the situation is not as bleak as everybody thinks for our native pollinators.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's important to know that when we talk about bee decline, we're talking about the European honeybee, which is introduced to this country and is, you know, very efficient insect in terms of pollinating, but is not native.
Correct. The honeybee is not native, but also what I have learned is a lot of our good native pollinators do a much better job than the honeybee.
Well, you know, maybe that's a good segue to go over right over to Carol Brown and talk about ecosystem gardening, because you're all about that, getting native plants. And as you know, native plants attract native insects. One of the you may be aware of. And it's happening to me. When I try to just pull things out of my head, they're not there today. I don't know what's going on. One of the things about planting natives that I have learned is that they sustain native insect populations like pollinators, but others as well. And we are risking our insect biomass, our local insect biomass, by bringing in non-natives, which insects cannot deal with. And I'm sure you're aware of that, aren't you, Carol?
I am. It sounds like you're referring to Doug Tallamy.
Thank you very much.
Bringing Nature Home.
Yeah, Bringing Nature Home, which I think is a wonderful book, and it's a really interesting argument about why we grow natives. And it's just one of the reasons, and you have others, of course.
I do. I'm kind of building on what Doug said. I'm all about wildlife, and the way that we're building, you know, you go down the street and there's a new Walmart or Home Depot popping up, you know, in what used to be our natural areas.
Hold on just one second. Nancy, is that you pouring a cup of coffee?
Mike?
Were you just pouring a cup of coffee there?
I was pouring a cup of coffee. I'm sorry.
It was like suddenly I was on a national public radio with all the sound effects and stuff.
All right, I won't do it again.
Okay, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Sorry.
I just heard this. I just wanted you to know that it came across really clearly. So.
Oh, dear.
So we'll go. So sip quietly, all right?
I will sip quietly.
Back to you, Carol. And yes, you're all about wildlife, and you live in Philadelphia, and you live in the city. And the question I would ask, because I ask this all the time of naturalists, can you have an effect even if you're living in your tiny little city plot?
Absolutely. My brother lives on the 25th floor of a high-rise in New York City, and I taught him to create a butterfly garden, and he has monarchs on his balcony on the 25th floor.
Really?
And if he can do it there, you know, whether you're in the city with a very small garden or out in the suburbs with, you know, maybe three-quarters of an acre or so, everything that you do, every step that you take can have immediate benefits. It's one of the few things in life that we get immediate gratification from. And if you put in a native plant that's a host plant for a specific butterfly, you will probably have that butterfly in your garden within weeks of putting that plant in.
How do they do that? I mean, you figure you're in the middle, like me. I live smack in the middle of Chicago in Logan Square. Humboldt Park's a couple of miles away. But you wonder how they're going to find my tiny little yard and my little group of plants.
Because your tiny little yard is an oasis in a desert, basically. There's nothing for those butterflies or birds to eat for miles around. You know, it's buildings and streets and parking lots and Chinese azaleas and Japanese honeysuckle.
Yeah.
So as soon as you add something that benefits the wildlife of your area, you may be the only place for miles around that has what they need.
You know, if you were just mentioning monarchs, and I want to bring this up because Bob Ehrlich, who is a friend of the show and who works with Monarch Watch, sent me an article the other day that the monarchs are making a partial comeback, and that's the headline, partial comeback. The Associated Press reports that the number of monarch butterflies migrating from Canada and the U.S. to Mexico has increased this year, and it's a hopeful sign because there was a 75% drop in their numbers last year. It says the total amount of forest covered by the colonies more than doubled from last year's historic low, but the numbers still remain well below average. This winter, there are 9.9 acres of colonies, more than doubled to 4.7 acres last year, the lowest level since comparable record keeping began in 1993. So they're rebounding, but we can help, can't we?
We absolutely can. We like to blame it on the logging that happens in their wintering sites. But it's also because up here many people think that milkweed is a weed and they spray it and there's no place for the monarchs to lay their eggs. So the more milkweed that each of us add to our gardens, the better off the monarch population will be.
But it's not just the monarchs, but monarchs are probably one of the easiest and showiest and most satisfying, and you get immediate response from planting milkweed because that's all they eat. That's all they want to, that's where they propagate, that's where they do their thing.
Yeah, most insects are tied to a specific plant or a specific family of plants. And without those plants, they don't have any place to eat, to lay their eggs. Their caterpillars only eat that one specific plant. So all butterflies have kind of the same thing going on. If they don't have their host plant, there's no place for them to go.
Nancy wanted to jump in here. Yes.
Yeah, and this is something that we really talk about a lot, and we have a mentoring program at the WPPC so that we help people to find plants that will attract our good native pollinators. But I think, you know, the key is, too, a lot of people don't like the common milkweed because it's not as showy and not as attractive. But we also try to direct our patrons' attention to the other milkweed plants, which are equally attractive to the monarchs and might be a little more showy for a cultivated garden. So there's, if you're doing a rain garden, you can use the swamp milkweed, which is Asclepias incarnata. And if you have a dry site, a hot and dry site, you can use the beautiful butterfly weed, which is Asclepias tuberosa. And then there's whorled milkweed, which is also a really pretty milkweed. And I get caterpillars on all my milkweeds, and I even like to grow It's not native here, but the Mexican milkweed, which, do you know the botanical name of that? It's, I think it's Asclepias cerisa, maybe, something like that. But that has a really showy flower. It grows well in McHenry County, and it attracts butterflies like crazy.
Are you familiar with that one, Carol?
I think, are you talking about the tropical milkweed?
Yeah, it has the red and yellow flowers.
Yes, and the name is escaped.
I can't
remember. Isn't that the one they call scarlet milkweed?
Sometimes they call it blood flower, Mexican blood flower, Mexican milkweed. We'll have to get that. I'll have to get that for you, and you can put it up on your website. But it's a very showy plant. It's not native here. It's not hardy here, so you've got to plant it every year. Grows well from seed, and I find it in the local nurseries around McHenry County.
Is it the Asclepias curassavica?
Yes.
Yes, that's what it is.
Thank you, Mark, for bringing that up. Hey, I just got a tweet here. I do container gardening on my apartment balcony. I get bees even though it's tar and there are no trees or shrubs on the property. So that confirms what you were saying there, Carol, about how even on a balcony you can make a difference.
Absolutely.
In terms of your concept of ecosystem gardening, let's say you do have a yard, though. I mean, that's basically where you can do it anywhere, but wouldn't it be nice to be on terra firma? Where does a person start with that?
Well, first I start with what you have. Look at the plants that are in your space and figure out where they came from. I'm surrounded by Norway maples and burning bush and English ivy, and all of these plants are from someplace else, and all of them are invasive, kind of taken over. So if you have any of those plants, you probably want to remove them because they just swallow up all of the other plants.
And do you want a list? Give me a short list.
Of the invasive plants?
Well, there's so many. I mean, you know, there's what do you deal with particularly in your neck of the woods?
Japanese honeysuckle, multiflora rose, oriental bittersweet, bishop's weed, Lester celandine. These are all plants on my what I call my most hated plants list.
You know, and here's the problem with that. I mean, you can list these plants. And I wonder how many of people listening to my show right now could even ID them. You know, because a lot, I know that I have some advanced gardeners, but I know I also have some folks who are just getting started. One of the things they can do is go to your website, ecosystemgardening.com. And I know you have a list of those plants because I went there and looked at some of the invasives you put there. So if you see those plants, you want to immediately get rid of them. However, for a long time, plants like bishop's weed have been used in backyard gardens. And once they get established, they're really hard to get out.
Really hard.
Oh, my goodness.
They are impossible.
The trouble is that many garden centers continue to sell these plants. So you go to the garden store and you think that they are going to give you good information. And if they're selling these plants, you know, you can unwittingly take something home that's going to swallow up your entire garden.
Yeah.
That happens all the time. And I'll add to that in new subdivisions, some of the plants that developers are always planting are Norway maples, burning bushes, euonymus, you know, the creeping euonymus, and
yeah,
Pachysandra. And, you know, there's so many wonderful things that you can use instead of those native,
I'll add one more species. I'll add one more because people, I don't know, English ivy.
Yes.
And folks want to plant English ivy. I don't know why it's not banned. It'll smother everything and
including your house.
Yeah, including your house. It'll take over, and it'll raid your refrigerator.
And, you know, for ground covers, I think that the wild ginger, which is native, or the Canada anemone, are so much more beautiful than pachysandra or ivy. And those also will fill in an area under a tree.
And I just got another tweet. It's a question. What are some good container and or balcony plants to attract butterflies and other beneficials? That's a great question.
Well, on my brother's balcony, we put some coral honeysuckle. He does get hummingbirds on his balcony. On it, and it grows up on a trellis. So on your balcony, you can have it on the railing and up the trellis. The milkweed, probably the Asclepias tuberosa, the one that butterfly weed, does very well on balconies.
I would add that when you're looking at native plants, there are some good cultural guides out there, and if you look for plants that do well in a dry situation, a lot of those plants will do well on a balcony. So, for example, we have our plant sale in May, and if you come and you ask for the plants that can tolerate dry conditions and sandy conditions, a lot of times those will do really well and take the heat. So I think, you know, some of the things you can plant on your balcony, prairie drop seed, which is a beautiful short grass, and it has a beautiful bloom on it. That'll do well in a container in McHenry County. Of course, your coneflowers.
Okay, now I'm gonna stop you right there, Nancy. And by the way, it's Nancy Gonciorek from the WPPC, also known as the Wildlife Preservation and Propagation Committee. Wildflower. See, I got it wrong already. It's too long.
Well, when your last name is Gonciorek, Mike, you don't get too picky.
That's true, you don't. But you said, you talked about prairie drop seed having a beautiful bloom. That's kind of, it's kind of misleading because it's more of an inflorescence, isn't it?
And, it's a grass, yeah.
Yeah,
so
and your idea
is a better term.
Your idea of a beautiful bloom is another person's, might look at it and say, huh? You know, even though it's a wonderful plant, not every, you know, people think of blooms, they think of coneflower.
Yeah.
You know, they think of daisy. They think an iris.
But I think the grasses are really, I think they're very popular now. You'll find prairie drop seed in any good quality nursery. You'll find little blue stem. They make, and purple love grass, that has a beautiful inflorescence, if that's what you would like to call it.
well, I just want to get it right.
Those are some incredible grasses that you can use in a container to give more texture to your design.
You know,
and many of the butterflies use those grasses for their to lay their eggs. You're providing habitat for butterflies by giving them a place to lay their eggs on those grasses.
Mm-hmm. And we need to make sure that let's use the natives there. Whether it's a grass, whether prairie grass, whether it's a sedge, sedges are very important in the landscape. And as you say, these are places where these insects can lay their eggs and benefit from having the plant in the yard. The other person there is Carol Brown, who has a website called Ecosystem Gardening and a book by the same name coming out in April. You have fans out there, Carol. I've got a tweet here says, listening to Mike Novak's show, interview the great Carol Brown. And the final message there is down with butterfly bush. Now, that's really kind of interesting because you talk about butterfly weed, which is Asclepias, which is what a monarch is going to be interested in, but butterfly bush, Buddleia, is not a native, and a lot of people love that plant because it smells nice and it does attract butterflies. What would be the problem with planting a butterfly bush, Carol?
It's also invasive. I've seen it taking over a beach in Cape May, New Jersey. I've seen it taking over stream banks in the Poconos in Pennsylvania. And although it does provide nectar, it's not a source of food for any caterpillar. It doesn't support new insect life.
It's one of the things that Doug Tallamy points out in his book, and I was, that sort of, as they say in Great Britain, gobsmacked me when I learned about that. But
it's a horrible problem in California, too.
And in England. Have you ever been to England and watched it growing out of the cracks in the walls?
Yeah. We don't have as much of a problem out here in McHenry County because it's not very hardy and it doesn't tolerate our clay soils that well.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times it's sort of a short-lived annual out here.
Before I let you go, Carol, any other thing you'd like to add about folks who are interested in practicing ecosystem gardening?
Well, the biggest question I get asked is, what should I plant? And the trouble is that that is a hard question to answer because the answer is different depending on where you are in the country.
Well, yes, of course, because the soil conditions are different, the temperature is different. I mean, for instance, here, I don't know what your soil conditions are in Philadelphia, but in Chicago area, it's a clayey, alkaline soil. Which, you know, that's going to affect the kind of plants you can put in the ground.
So my advice to people is to find organizations like the Wildflower Preservation and Propagation Committee. They're state native plant organizations, a local native plant nursery. These are the sources of the best information that you're going to get.
Yeah, you got to go to the people in the area who know. Of course, another organization would be Wild Ones, and there are Nancy. Do you recommend any particular books for this area?
Well, you know, we're all very big on the Doug Tallamy book, of course. That's a great book. We do have, you know, some wildflower field books. We do sell all those books at our plant sale, and again at our natural landscaping seminar. So we do have a lot of books that we recommend.
Mm-hmm.
I think, we're really looking forward to Carol's book, and we were so disappointed we weren't going to be able to have that at our seminar, but hopefully we'll be able to have that at our sale.
Hey, listen, what people do is they get on the list, you know? You have them mm-hmm. sign up to receive the book.
Right. And
I'm preparing a sneak preview, Nancy, for your attendees.
Oh, great. That's fabulous.
Sign up and get some resources and some good information to start
yeah.
out with.
The other thing we do is, you know, for example, we hold a plant sale once a year. It's at McHenry County College. It'll be the first Sunday in May. It's always the first Sunday in May. And we have all the experts there. And we have our plants divided up into categories. So there's a woodland area, and then there's grasses and a prairie area and a wet area. So that you can go to the area that you're interested in for your own yard and talk to the experts and have us help you.
And, of course, the conference is next Saturday at McHenry County College Conference Center. That's 8900 U.S. Route 14 in Crystal Lake, Illinois, 8 a.m. to 3:45 p.m. As Nancy says, there's going to be all kinds of books and great speakers. And what am I missing?
We always have all kinds of vendors out in the lobby.
Yes, yes.
They provide information, advice, handouts, and also some of them sell various items that are related to our mission. So we'll have we'll have the bee guy, the pollen path, and he actually makes beautiful bee houses and bird feeders and things like that for you to hang in your yard. And he has a lot of information about our good native pollinators and birds. We have a lady that makes bird baths and stepping stones for your yard. We have a gentleman that makes beautiful jewelry that looks like oak leaves and other native plants. So, and then we have a lot of our natural area volunteers there to talk to you.
And they have great information, too. So listen, it's a great deal. It's like, what, $30 in advance, $35 at the door. So,
and a really yummy lunch. I have to say, we have the best lunch. We have these little bagel sandwiches. There's all these assortments, and they're the best bagels around. And there's all different types of sandwiches mm-hmm. and some really yummy salads. And really good brownies. So you're gonna, I'm all about the food.
Yeah, you're going to pack them in. Carol, thank you so much for joining us. Have fun next week in McHenry County. We're glad you're in our neck of the woods.
I'm totally looking forward to it. Thank you, Mike.
And Nancy, yeah, whatever. good luck. And Nancy's running for office. You can go to her website, nancygonciorg.com.
Thank you so much, Mike.
I had to get the plug in. All right, I'll talk to you later. Take care now. Have a great Sunday.
Bye-bye.
Bye. It's the Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I got a real interesting tweet from my buddy Scott Jameson that I'm going to have to tell you about. I wasn't aware of this, and he sent me a story, so we'll do that in a second. But I need to ask you this question. Have you marked your calendar yet? SIDS 22nd Annual Home and Garden Expo is coming to their Palos Hill store on Friday and Saturday, March 4th and 5th. Now, I spoke there last year, and I can tell you that this event really gets spring off to a great start, even if it jumps the gun by a couple of weeks. But that's not a problem, because we all want an excuse to celebrate spring early. SIDS Garden Expo focuses on earth-friendly products with reduced environmental impact. They reach out to an elite group of hand-selected lawn and garden vendors to show you all that green and growing. Admission is free. There's free parking, too. There will be more than 75 exhibitors, free seminars, product demonstrations, door prizes, refreshments, and, of course, plants. Expo hours are Friday. That's the 4th of March, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Saturday, the 5th of March, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Visit SIDSonline.com for all of the details. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687, for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. In 2010, the Care of Trees was recognized for the sixth straight year as a company that cares. The Center for Companies That Care named 29 organizations to their honor roll. They are selected for their commitment to elevating the quality of the work environment for their employees and the quality of life for people in the broader community. These award winners are selected by an independent panel of veteran professionals in a variety of industries. Each of the organizations named to the honor roll sustains a work environment founded on dignity and respect for all employees, develops great leaders, communicates standards of ethics and integrity, and participates in initiatives that support the community. My congratulations, and I'm not surprised that they won it for the sixth straight year, but my congratulations to the Care of Trees. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborists at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, a 2010 Company That Cares Award winner. Oh, oh, oh. Hey, where's the egg? Hey, come on!
I never took you as a Gaga fan.
You know, yeah, I kind of like
catchy,
this song.
Isn't it?
Yeah,
I
it
like
is.
This one too. The other one's not so much, but this one, she put something extra in this one, in my opinion. I don't know what.
Yeah. But she got a lot of criticism for her latest song just being kind of a ripoff of Madonna. The whole act is a ripoff of Madonna.
Duh!
I mean, it's just it's
and Madonna was a ripoff of Marilyn in her own right. You know, I mean,
well, Marilyn Monroe,
like.
No.
Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, the whole material.
Well,
material
yeah,
girl
but
video.
Marilyn wasn't she wasn't a recording artist.
No, she wasn't.
I mean, she could sing, but you know, it's Madonna, the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's in you know, it, kids don't know that,
right?
So
it's just like, well, the clothes from the '80s are back now. I saw a girl the other day with hair that I'm like, you're gonna regret that in 10 years. It was all feathered and coiffed on top, and
what?
It was like, oh dear.
Oh, you mean when the photos?
The pictures of me from the '80s. God forbid they ever find light today.
Have we got Irv online there? Okay, Irv, hang on a second. I want to get to a story here that just came up via Twitter. My buddy Scott Jameson wrote, he said, the North American Tree Conference begins today in Savannah. The tumor oaks in Auburn will be the buzz. And I'm thinking, what?
Tumor oak? What's a tumor oak?
T-O-O-M-E-R. And then he sent me an update. And it's this article. Let's see where the article is. From the University of Tampa, and it says, thousands mourn historic trees at rally in Auburn. And there's this amazing photograph with, believe it or not, toilet paper hanging from these trees. But and it sounds funny, but it's not. It says, a steady stream of people began to arrive early Saturday morning to mourn. This is published yesterday. A steady stream of people began to arrive early Saturday morning to mourn the poisoning of oak trees at Toomer's Corner, where Auburn fans have long celebrated wins. Fans took pictures and left gifts and tributes, including rolls of toilet paper that surrounded the two 130-year-old oaks located on the fringes of campus. The rally reflected the depth of pain and frustration engulfing this community. It was an Alabama fan, Harvey Updike Jr., 62, a 62-year-old man, who apparently let his passion spiral out of control. Updike has been charged with first-degree criminal mischief for allegedly using a tree-destroying herbicide to poison the oaks after Auburn beat the Crimson Tide in November. He was released from the Lee County Detention Facility on bond Friday night. In this state, you're either an Alabama or Auburn fan, and declarations of neutrality can draw a disbelieving sneer. Once a year, everything comes to a complete stop when Alabama and Auburn lock horns in the Iron Bowl. And then after the game ends, people talk about it the rest of the year. And for generations of Auburn's fans, Toomer's Corner has been the spot to revel in those games. Blah, blah, blah. Let's see where it goes. I don't have time.
What
to
read. A jerk.
Yeah. So apparently, I don't know, you know, how they found out it was him. It's a long article.
An herbicide like that, does it kill a tree fast?
Well, I don't, and he called it, I've got to find in here, because I just got this and I'm reading it on the fly. So I don't really know what the poison was. Maybe I can find it when I get a chance, but that's sick, you know? A lot of idiots in the world. And
sadly, we'll never run out.
No. We will not run out of idiots. I wish I had more information on it, but I don't know.
There's a guy who I wish hadn't read and followed the label directions.
Yeah.
Sometimes it works against you.
Yeah, so that was sent to me, and that's just a sad story. Thanks for sending that, Scott. Unfortunately, now I'm going to be depressed.
Yeah, buzzkill.
The rest of the day.
Well, let's just hope Auburn just pounds the you-know-what out of, you said it was Oklahoma?
Well, it's, you know.
Ohio?
No, it was Auburn and Alabama.
Alabama. Well, now I'm going to root for Auburn every time. So there, Alabama.
So let us, on that note, go to line one and bring in Irv Cernauskas. Is that how you pronounce it, Irv?
Yes, sir. Very good.
Oh, how
glad
about
to be here with you, Mike.
It's wonderful to talk to you. And Irv is, he's the Irv behind Irv and Shelley's Fresh Picks, which is a local and organic food delivery service. And I wasn't even aware something like this existed. You and I chatted the other day, and I kind of compared it to a CSA where, you know, you order your food at the beginning of the season from a farm. And they deliver for a certain length of time, you know, whatever length the contract is. How are you different from a CSA?
Well, first, you know, the ways in which we're the same is we do buy direct from local farms, and we're really proud of the work they do. What we're trying to do is reach a new segment of the market by offering more flexibility and choice and convenience. So you don't have to commit to anything up front. You just pay as you go, so you don't have to sign up for a whole season. You're going to be out of town half the summer. That's no impediment. You can just stop ordering when you don't need to take deliveries. You can order a la carte, so you don't have to just take a mixed box of the surprise box of the week. If you want to order individual items, you can do that, and we customize the boxes we do pack. We do have a seasonal produce box, and if you don't like something or are allergic to something, we can substitute out and customize it for you. And, of course, we do home delivery, whereas most CSAs offer a central pickup location that you have to go to each week. And we operate 52 weeks a year. Most CSAs just operate during the growing season. And we also have a lot of other products besides produce, meat, dairy products, eggs, baked goods, prepared foods.
It's so... forgive me for asking this question. How is it that you can work in concert with CSAs? Don't you feel like you're competing with them?
Well, actually, I think most of our farmers, the more successful ones, work farmers markets. They have CSAs, and they do have a wholesale line of their business, too. And for them, it works because it diversifies their income. You know, as a farmer, you always have to grow a little bit more than you think you might need for your CSA in case of a bad weather event or a pest attacks your crop. But if everything goes great and you've got a bumper crop, more than you can use, it's nice to have an outlet where you can sell volumes of surplus. And we love to serve in that role as an outlet for our farmers to help them move product beyond what they can sell through their other channels. So we see it as a way to augment their income rather than compete with it.
You know, I'm looking at online, and you can go to Irv's website, and you can link to it at mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show, or you can go to, let's see here, that would be www.freshpicks.com. And I'm looking at some of your Fresh Picks boxes. Like the double, which is $25, and for the week of February 21st, you've got local Yukon, and there are a lot of local products. Mostly, it's all local products, right?
Well, at this time of year, maybe half the products are not from the Midwest. But yeah, you're right. Even in the depth of winter, we can get a good amount of produce locally. You know, root and storage crops, and we have greenhouse growers that we're getting Boston lettuce locally grown this week.
Yeah, and in this particular box, it's Yukon Gold potatoes, garlic, black Spanish radishes, sprouts, Boston lettuce, and portobello mushrooms, plus, and then the outside, California leeks, collard greens, bunched carrots, and fennel. And it's $25. That sounds like a great price.
Well, you know, we want everybody to be able to afford to eat well. Yeah, we try to be competitively priced.
And of course, you deliver.
That's right. That convenience factor, we think, can help us reach a lot of people who aren't going to be able to get to the farmers markets or can't get to a CSA drop location, but do want to see their food dollars getting back to Illinois farms.
All right. Now, I'm looking here. You've got a recipe special for the week of February 21st. Try sweet shepherd's pie. So you give people the ingredients they need to cook it themselves?
Right.
And do you give them the recipe as well so they know what they're doing?
Oh, yeah. We have a recipe page on our website, so you can go there and you'll be able to see the recipe of the week and a whole host of recipes that we've collected over the years.
That's amazing. I like that idea for idiots like me and you know, standing in front of a stove going, huh?
Well, I'm a working parent. It would be awesome to be able to have a healthy, perfectly good, organic, wonderful meal just ready to go. You know, just come home, slap it together. Done. That's great.
That's I love to cook, but I get tired of the same old repertoire, you know, and it's nice to get some new ideas.
Wow. So I understand that you have an interesting story about how all of this came about.
Well, I serve as a board member on two local not-for-profits that are active in food issues. And through that work, I met some farmers, and I began to appreciate all the great work they do. And that is the reason why I signed on to serve on the Food, Farms, and Jobs Council. They're doing such a great job for us, protecting our local ecosystems and growing great, healthy food. So for me, meeting those farmers was really inspiring and made me think about ways that I could help. Maybe I could figure out a way to earn a living that really helped to contribute to their efforts and to all the great benefits of eating local food.
Well, you're obviously doing something right, because I've got a tweet from somebody who says, I'm a happy Fresh Picks customer. They are amazing.
Oh, that's great. That's what keeps us going every day. We love to see people eat well, and we love to see those food dollars go back to create jobs here, right here in the Midwest.
Well, what I love about your business is the flexibility of it. And obviously that's your strong suit, is that you can do it 1 week or 2 weeks or 10 or 20. And as you said, you can, if you're going out of town, you don't have to do it that week. That is something that a lot of people are going to appreciate.
Well, and as much as a resource for consumers, we also really think of ourselves, and we work really hard to be a partner with our growers. Like I said, if they've got an extra crop that they don't know what they're going to do with this week, I get calls all the time from farmers saying, Irv, can you use 800 pieces of butternut squash? I always try to find a way to say yes, so we can get that food to people who want to eat great food and support the incomes of those growers.
Well, and that's a great thing, because you're supporting local growers in a multi-state region, with Chicago basically as the hub. Is that correct?
Right. I mean, we are just as close to Wisconsin as to many parts of Illinois, so we draw from Wisconsin growers as well as Indiana and Michigan, but a lot of Illinois growers. So we have pretty much anywhere within about a 200-mile radius is what we consider local.
Well, the name of the company is Irv and Shelley's Fresh Picks, and again, you can go to my website, MikeNovak.net, and log on to that. If you go to this week's show, just scroll down to the Good Growing segment, because that's what this is, Good Growing. You can also, if you just want to skip that, just go online to FreshPicks.com. A couple minutes here. You're also on, as you mentioned before, on the Illinois Local Foods, Farms, and Jobs Council. And you're kind of an anomaly in that, in terms of the business you represent.
Well, I don't know. I want to say maybe we're all anomalies on that council. There's so many different players from so many different parts of life. We have businesses, farms, not-for-profits, government bodies, all working on many of the same issues over the past several years. And what's great about the council is we can all come together and connect the dots so as to develop real active partnerships between people who share these same goals, and to kind of align and unify the efforts of these many great people. And, you know, we're only one company, and we can only, do so much. There's a big supply chain, and we need people working on every level of this issue.
What do you think is the next big issue for the council? Because you're looking at the local foods in Illinois and making them profitable. What do you see as your next big task?
Well, we have moved on from our infancy this past year. The council was just appointed last year.
Right, you're not even a year old yet.
Right, well, and what we've done in this past year is we've organized subcommittees and developed work plans so that we can meet our mandate, which is to increase the amount of food that's provided locally in Illinois. And as we move into full operation this year, you'll hear more about that. But what we're trying to do is just connect the dots between all these different players and really make it a more coherent You know, I think of it as kind of each one of us is a thread. Fresh Picks is one thread. You know, and there's so many threads out there that we, the council, is trying to weave into a fabric that can really be stronger than just the sum of its parts. And, you know, to your point about me being an anomaly, well, that's what makes it a great body, is that it brings so many talents and resources and perspectives together. And then we can learn from each other and support each other and really make sure that anybody who needs resources, we can figure out where to find them and move this ahead. So, you know, one of the more important aspects of what we will do going forward on the council is to work to keep those food dollars here in Illinois. You know,
yeah, that's the important thing, yeah.
The more those dollars circulate through our local economy, the more that creates real jobs, farm labor, supporting businesses and services in rural communities. So to me, it's like, it's a stimulus program, you know, for job creation.
That's
program.
A really good point. Yeah, there's our local stimulus. Well, that's Irv Cernoskis of Irv and Shelley's Fresh Picks. Really, check them out. I'm getting good reports on them. So, I may have to do that too, and I'll give you my own report on that. And Irv, of course, we'll talk in the future. Keep me posted on what you're doing. It was great meeting you this time, Irv.
Well, thank you so much for your interest, Mike. Stay tuned. You'll see some good stuff come out of the council this year, I think.
I'm sure we will. All right, have a great Sunday. Talk to you later.
You too. Thank you.
Bye. Did you notice that it's been winter for about 6 months and we're still in the middle of February? Well, maybe I'm exaggerating a little, but if that's the way you feel, you need a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. The January-February issue is the annual garden planning edition, complete with three holes punched in the side so you can throw it into your binder and refer to it all year long. And since you're planning your Zone 5 garden right now, that's where we live, you might want to read the article about shrubs by Madam Editor Carolyn Ulrich. She organizes them by bloom color and gives you great advice about what to plant in your yard. Our very own Beth Botts has a story about your edible garden and what you should be doing every month this year to get the most out of your vegetable plants. And of course, there's my column on the inside back page. While every word in it might not be true, at least they've been spell-checked by Madam Editor Carolyn Ulrich, of course. You can purchase Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over Chicago. Better yet, get a subscription. Call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600, or go to chicagolandgardening.com.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
All right, it's time to bring this puppy in. Heather, what you've been doing over there?
That was my anniversary present, because I've been doing nothing.
A day off. A day off
for
Heather.
I just get to enjoy the view today.
In case you didn't hear the beginning of the show, Heather, this is her second anniversary on the Mike Novak Show, so... and Mark Yay. Munger, nice job, buddy.
Yeah, he did very good.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure and a privilege.
Yeah. And
well, he comes from good stock.
That's true.
There's
he's a Joe McCardle
minion
protege.
Yeah, there you go. Protege sounds
so,
better.
So a shout out to Joe McCardle. And
we love you, Joe.
And thanks for being part of the team today. We'll discuss the further details as we go along. Yeah, we'll see. You know, he might run, again, like I said, he might run screaming.
He
from
might.
The, you know.
I haven't yet. You kept me around for 2 years. I haven't sent you running and screaming yet either. So that's a win on both ends.
Well, we got to get out of here. And as we always say before the end of the show, go green.
Or go home.
We'll see you next week.